Four Midwest Guys presents Star Trek Beyond Reaction.
Everybody, and welcome back to Four Midwest Guys Presents Star Trek Beyond Reactions. We're finally back from our little summer hiatus, a slight little vacation for everybody, but we're back and ready to go. With me today is Johnny Z.
I had a vacation.
You did?
Did I?
Did you? Did you enjoy it?
I went out of town with a two-year-old. How much vacation could that be?
Okay.
Well, and my parents.
St. John the Perpetual Highway. And his lovely wife, Stephanie.
Who also had a vacation.
Who had to go on vacation with me, so it was less of a vacation.
Hello.
Hello. And that's all she's going to say.
She's like, it was a change of scenery.
And down the hallway is Aaron, my brother Aaron.
Hey, how's it going, man?
How's it going?
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
Good. And with him down the hallway is Mr. Brian Eggenbauer.
Hello.
They're sharing a mic, just so you know.
That's not all they're sharing.
Because
and that's what we're sharing.
Whoa, wait now.
I think there's some implications there I'm not aware of.
Apparently the hallway.
Whoa. Okay. Here's a hot dog. You see the problem here?
And there we go. All right. We're back. We're right back where we left
off. And on that note, we're talking about Star Trek. Why does that connect?
I don't know.
I'm not even going to go there. To boldly go where? Never mind. Okay, so the first part, so we're going to get into it. First part, we'll go into, we're going to do a real quick spoiler-free, just in case you haven't seen the movie yet. Then we'll do our spoiler section and go from there. So, and we'll also have some quick-fire questions at the end. So, let's just get right into initial spoiler-free reactions. Just real quick from everybody, is it worth seeing? Just a quick yes or no, Mr. Eckenbauer?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure.
Aaron says sure. Stephanie?
Yes.
Johnny?
Absolutely.
I agree. 100% yes. Scale from 1 to 10 on just the special effects. Brian?
10.
10? Aaron?
9.
Okay. Stephanie?
9.
Okay.
8.5, 9.
I'll go 9.5. I thought it was pretty good. So, well worth it for the effects. Action scale.
There were moments I did ask how they did it. Sometimes, even though I know it's computers, but still,
yeah, it looked good.
I had to throw in more than just a little.
No, that's fine. I was waiting for it, actually. I'm surprised we got that far. Action scale, 1 to 10, Brian.
9.
Okay.
7.
Aaron? 7?
Yep.
Okay. Stephanie?
That was a noise upstairs that's distracting her right now. I think it was... Oh, hi, cat. Holy crap. Oh, my God.
Okay. Thanks for
the cat has apparently wanted to up the action scale.
There's a cat in your drapes.
All right, so that bumps that up to an 8.
Aaron has changed it from a 7 to an 8. Thanks
seven.
To the cat. 7 from Stephanie.
Steph's traumatized by the thought of her cat in peril.
You ever seen a cat with an ocean face?
And that was his ass. He had the ocean ass.
It's like, oh shit.
Relief by John's cat.
All right. Cat's awesome.
Action,
I would probably rate it a 9.
9, okay. I would also give it a 9, actually.
Considering that,
for a Star Trek movie special.
Yeah, for Star Trek movie standard stuff, yeah, it's a 9.
Okay.
She just gave me a look, you're like, really?
Story and plot, 1 to 10, Brian.
7.
7?
Okay. 7.
7? Steph?
Fair. 7.
7? Okay.
Yeah, 7 to 8, yeah.
Yeah, I'll actually bump it up as an 8. There were some different things. They went a few different areas, I thought. So, I'll give it an 8. Finally, did it feel like Star Trek? Brian.
Which Star Trek? Like, does it feel like the Star Trek, like the originals? Like, is it like you know, like...
Is it the slow motion picture?
Kirk and stuff, or like the new reboot?
The prequel Star Trek?
I would say as a whole, like as the genre as a whole, even though the reboots are have a kind of a different feel, but...
Okay, it felt 100% like the reboots.
Okay. Alright.
But it does not feel like the Captain Kirk and all those...
The original movies. Okay, that's fair.
The change in graphics.
Yeah. It was the change in graphics, change in pace, a lot more action than the other movies had. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it's similar to the reboots I've seen.
Okay, that's fair. What do you think, Steph?
Star Trek reboot.
You're gonna keep with the short answer tonight, aren't you?
Doing this Johnny's on purpose. Yeah, I bring her. I say, hey, she's got to do this because she's like this lifelong Star Trek fan, and now she's giving me nothing intentionally.
She's like, okay.
Sorry.
You married her.
Anyway,
go ahead.
Yes, I'm very
good. Johnny.
I guess I almost want to say yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, in the sense that it had a lot of the feel of the interaction of the characters, and I like the way it played out, and no, in the sense that it's like the reboots doing its own thing from the series, and I was even telling Steph when we first came out of it that a lot of like the really great ones, like parts 2, 4, and 6, of course the even number ones, they all were metaphors for something larger, and this one, not much of a metaphor, but it still did its own thing, so that's why I'm kind of torn when you ask, is it like Star Trek? So I'm like, yes mm-hmm. and no. So yeah.
Okay, to be fair, it's not going to be like the old Star Trek movies, because it's not the old Star Trek movies. Mm-hmm. These are all reboots. These are all different. Mm-hmm. These are all different.
Different time.
They're the same characters, but they're different actors, different people putting their own spin on this.
Okay.
So that's
your thing. Yeah. I will go and say, as far as the reboots are concerned, since we're kind of going down that way, I would say as the reboots go, this one felt the most like Star Trek to me compared to the first two. As far as comparing between the two series, this one had a little bit more of the science in it. It wasn't more like, hey, here's the problem, let's just go with it. It's actually was a little bit of logic and reasoning behind it, and that's more Star Trek. It was less Star Wars this time around and more Star Trek than the other two have been, in my opinion, although the action is nonstop, and I'll give it that, but the other two feel more like Star Wars to me than Star Trek. This one at least has familiar character interactions from the original series, and also has, like I said, a little bit more logic and science kind of thrown in there. At least they try to throw it in there.
The first one, though, was also, if we're going to talk about the reboots like that, the second one needs to be thrown up because it was crap. The first one was really good because you saw the interactions and how they were going to interact. And you saw that in the first Star Trek film also. Mm-hmm. When Bones and Spock met, when Jim met his crew and stuff like that. That's you saw that interaction there. But in this one you saw more in depth interaction because they needed that. Because they didn't have that in the last one.
Yeah, they actually had, like, the way the story played out in this one, they gave him a chance to where each one had like their own individual story and were allowed to play off each other just right.
Well, I was reading an article about it, and they were talking about, like, the main focus of this movie was unity and group and strength of everybody together.
Yeah.
And that's what they were trying to hone in on throughout the whole movie. So that was the underlying metaphor, and it played out really well.
Yeah, it came through big time, yeah.
Yeah. And to be fair, for not that I want to make this a Star Trek in the Darkness podcast, but... I mean, what they were trying to do there is they were trying to do a play off the original Star Trek 2.
No, I understand, and they did it wrong.
Well, right, well, no. they tried to make it Khan versus Spock instead of Khan versus Kirk, and it was...
Oh, I'm leaving this almost.
A little bit of a mess. I agree.
They did it absolutely wrong.
Okay, I'll tell the story.
And compared to the first reboot, it was a letdown. I didn't think it was horrible.
Which, actually, funny thing is, around the time that Into Darkness came out, that summer they had a Star Trek convention. I can't remember what anniversary it was, but they had all the fans rank each of the Star Trek movies.
Mm-hmm.
Into Darkness ranked dead last. Like, past and
no way. Final Frontier is the last.
Well, because here's
Star Trek 5 is horrible.
I'm actually going to say Insurrection for me.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
Insurrection. Here's the thing. Why was Star Trek V bad?
Star Trek V was horrible.
Okay, do you remember the scenes that made it horrible?
Other than Spock had a brother, and that they went across this great barrier, and then they found Spock's brother to be, or they found this being that couldn't get off the planet who was pretending to be God, that Spock's brother was trying to chase down, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
Ugh.
What do you remember from Part 9?
What, Insurrection?
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole, them wanting to take over the, that's... Or- No, you got the Romulans. See,
that's exactly what I'm saying. Well, no, 9 is so forgettable, and that's the last thing that should happen in a Star Trek movie.
It's not forgettable.
It's forgettable. Yeah. It was that colony of people that aged a long time, well, and it violates the very essence of it, of the needs of the many outweighed the needs of the few. Hey, we're gonna save this small colony so that, you know, billions of people can die so that we can't study you. I mean, it literally violates the entire basis of the Star Trek franchise. So, yeah, I'm still saying Insurrection's my least favorite, but Stephanie actually has turned me around to realizing just how much of a violation Into Darkness was. Which, and I gotta say, the one thing that did piss me off about that, and I gotta put some blame on Abrams for it, how many months did he say, no, Khan is not in this movie?
Well, yeah, of course he would.
That's the reveal. Give away your biggest,
but
biggest
here's the thing.
Twist.
But
that's supposed to be the reveal.
But you can have a better way of doing it. Like, how many months did we go by and people kept asking George Martin, hey, is Jon Snow alive? Is Jon Snow alive? He never answered, but he never once lied. That's a thing. Is
yeah,
it?
People say they feel betrayed, but you know what? That's the biggest part of that movie. That's one of the big reveals of that movie. I would say the same thing if I was JJ.
Exactly.
I didn't care that they had Khan in the movie. That, yay! Awesome. Good.
Well, I was
disappointed in that they made it about him and Spock and not about him and Kirk, because that was the whole.
Well, they were trying to do the whole
universal thing. Like you said, it was a new twist on all the different stuff.
A, it's a new twist. B, it's supposed to be parallel universes and different things happening at different times.
But here's the thing. It's not so much a new twist when you take literally one entire page of the most sacred dialogue in a Star Trek franchise and just switch the character names.
Oh, I agree. It's lazy writing.
That was lazy-ass writing.
But they also said, you know, When Spock met up, when he's like, "Oh, you're not the captain. You're the first officer," and he's like, "Yeah, you're the captain." He's like,
"But the line should not
really
be the same.
Interesting.
If it's a different universe and a different timeline, they aren't going to say the exact same things that they said in the other timeline."
How do you know? What other timeline have you been in?
All right. Okay. Well, let's not turn this into.
I'm going to break out the multiverse theories here. Yeah. But here's the thing: they can't exist in the same universe. Just
like I said,
identically, they cannot.
John.
I don't want to make this about Star Trek Into Darkness. So, all right. So that is our spoiler-free section of Star Trek Beyond. So from this point on, you got fair warning, spoiler alert from this point forward. So if you don't want to know any spoilers, stop
shields
the podcast.
Up.
Shields up. Earplugs in now.
Red alert. Red shirts off.
Why would you put your earplugs in and continue to listen to the podcast?
Hey, we don't want the ratings.
We don't care if you put earplugs in and ignore us. Just keep playing us.
Exactly. Over and over. Put us on repeat and walk away.
Yeah, that's right.
Let us be the white noise as you sleep.
We need
wake
hits. Hits, 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 hits. Stats. Please, no, I'm kidding. Anyway. All right.
Desperate.
All right, guys. No more restrictions. Shields down. Phasers off stun. Blah, blah, blah.
Apparently, according to this one, it didn't matter if we had our shields up. The thing was going to, like, fucking destroy the ship anyway.
Dude, it was... This thing was just from... It was like Star Trek on speed. I don't think I've ever seen a Star Trek movie from... Literally from the first scene...
Warp speed and furious.
Yeah, I mean, just... out of control. I was very impressed with it. I didn't think a Star Trek movie could do what they did with that Star Trek movie. I don't know. So let's get back to the question we ended with in our spoiler. Did it feel like Star Trek, yes or no, and why? And Steph, I'll let you take the lead on this one.
It's all you.
Yeah.
Let your nerd flag wave high. Come on. Come on, I love it.
I started to say it in the non-spoiler part, I guess. Yes, to me it felt like a really good Star Trek film. It paid homage to old Star Trek, and it did it very well in you know, talking about Spock, talking, and then at the towards the end of the film, where you see the picture of the old crew, that I was in tears.
Oh my god, yeah.
I was like crying at that part, and it was so good.
And they were playing the original theme too.
Yes, they were. And it, to me, yes, it did feel like a good campy Star Trek film, and one that I'll probably watch over and over again. And I'll show, you know, my daughter and things like that. So.
She loves the music, I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I was very happy with it.
Okay. So it definitely felt like Star Trek to you.
The first scene, the first part of it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. This is so fun.
The first part of it, the first scene, I was like, what the fuck am I watching?
The second, the first star.
Where he's all mopey about being a Star Trek.
No, not that. The first star. Okay, sorry, I was just going to say.
So the little alien thing.
The stupid little alien bullshit. I was like,
God.
I'm like, when did Star Trek meet Men in Black? I'm like, what the fuck is
that,
this?
Yeah, that was a really bad scene.
I thought it was pretty funny, actually.
In terms of just like how it was shot, just, it was amusing. Like, you have that like, kind of play on, like, size.
Yeah, that was,
yeah. Was kind of cool.
That was hilarious.
Yeah.
But it was, I'm like, what are they doing to my
Holy
Star
shit.
Trek? I'm like, I get that Tribbles are aliens. I get it. There's different aliens. We don't know what all they look like. But what
or
the
size?
Fuck?
I thought that was hilarious.
I thought that
and it was relevant to the overall plot
great.
At the end.
I thought it was fucking great, but as it opened up to this, I was like, ooh.
Yeah, the funny thing is, like, the very first star of the Paramount logo flies up on screen, and the first words that she mutters out of her mouth, I hear, "This better not suck," because she was just that seething. I wish you guys could have been there to see her, like, coming out of Into Darkness. Everyone was like, "Wow, so much fun!"
But
and
this
there
isn't
was,
about Into Darkness.
No, it's not about Into Darkness. So, no, you've been waiting 3 years with the pain of Into Darkness still sitting fresh in you.
I won't watch that.
She won't.
I saw it in the theater. I will not watch it.
And
again.
Then, yeah, she went into it. She's like, Try to be a blank slate. That one star appears like, "This better not suck."
All right, John. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, and then that first scene shows up. And I'm with you. I mean, that was... I started to get that feeling, too. I was like, what the hell are they doing? Because in that scene, you're like, yeah, it's a little dog-like creature. Like, he just asked a question. It's very proper. And then all of a sudden, he just gets bipolar. He's like, you got declaring war. I'm like, what the hell is happening?
I thought it was just, like...
It was felt very rushed. I mean, don't get me wrong. It was pretty cool that, like, he jumps down because you think you're seeing, like, this 12-foot mammoth-sized alien.
Take out Kirk.
And then he jumps down. He's like a little ankle biter. He's like a little chihuahua.
That's what makes it funny.
It was funny, yeah, but...
And then there's, like, a ton of them all hanging on.
Yeah, then it just goes into that kind of just mob, just hush.
And it just,
Zulu, get me
out
of here!
It felt so weird, but...
I thought it was great.
Yeah, looking back on it, like, it... set up a lot of stuff for the rest of the plot, and it was kind of fun because and then the scene that immediately follows after that, that's the moment that at least started to feel like Star Trek, because it's not the fact that he's mopey, it's the fact that they're saying, yeah, it's a 5-year journey, we're 3 years into it, and then just like, and you start seeing the crew. I mean, in the last couple movies, when's the last time we've seen anything other than the main cast? We started seeing the rest of the crew in some small manner.
I thought it was also cool they brought up his birthday again.
Yeah, they
brought that back.
And he said, I'm 1 year older than my father would have been.
Yeah, they're very much Batman and Superman. That seems to be a theme this year.
Well, no, but this was done well and written well.
Yeah, well, that's another podcast.
Right.
But yeah, it's just like when you felt the weight and, you know, then Bones comes out. And then just started talking about Kirk's kind of just a conflict as a leader.
Mm-hmm. And it was nice to see Bones back, though, as a friend. As a friend.
And
confidant.
And with that great sense of Bones humor, too.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he wasn't, quite as, like, grizzled as DeForest Kelly was at the
age.
He's
pretty close.
He's getting close, but he still got that attitude, which is what was great.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, like, so that's what it started feeling like. Started like, okay, because... For the longest time, I remember reading about Simon Pegg, and Simon Pegg has said, yeah, we're really sorry about Into Darkness, but guys, I'm a lifelong Star Trek fan. Let me write the script, and I'll do you justice. And then I was like, hey, cool, Simon Pegg, he's a big fan. And then I see, like, Justin Lin, the director of Fast and Furious. I went, oh, shit. I was like, they're going to try to make it action-oriented. And then I just recently read that Justin Lin himself was a lifelong Star Trek fan. And I was like, okay.
On board.
So, yeah, you got a writer that loves the source material. You got a director that loves the source material. Yeah, I just...
So it definitely felt like Star Trek.
That's what it started to feel like, Star Trek, for me. I'm sorry.
Okay. Aaron?
I can only really compare it just to the reboots, because I never watched the older franchise. But
that's fair enough.
For me, it holds up to the previous films. I mean, especially if you're going back to the first one, where it does, you know, kind of focus on the relationships very heavily.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I think this one's a bit more fast-paced than the previous two. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah.
It made it a big...
Yeah, but at the same time, yeah, it definitely holds up. I think it did well in terms of, like, homages to, like, the older series as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Brian?
Yeah, I liked it. I felt it was just like a Star Trek movie for me.
Yeah.
Like I said, aside from the originals, you know, it was way faster paced, but it kept up with the reboot.
It did.
Each reboot has kind of went a little faster as it's gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the next one, just everyone's on cocaine.
Yeah,
just all the time.
So like in 30 years, the next reboot, it's literally going to feel like those, like, you know, shoot up sequences in Requiem for a Dream, where it's just like completely insanely paced.
Yeah, but I really like the opening scene with the creatures and stuff, because they've opened almost what the first one open with.
The first one opened with the
Romulan
ship coming in and, you know, basically destroying Kirk's father.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. And Kirk's father then, stayed which, behind.
Right. And then the second one is the one that started with the other planet where Spock went down to stop the volcano.
No, that's the first one.
No, that's the second.
That's the second. It starts with the volcano. Yeah. So they're observing the people, and then they want to. You know,
right into the water. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So then this one starts out with the same thing. Basically, they're peacekeepers in the, you know, in the universe, or whatever. So yeah, that it felt very Star Trek-ish to me.
That's a good point. Yeah. For me, it definitely felt like Star Trek from everything, from the way that the characters interacted, which we'll get into a little bit more later. Right down to, like I said, they threw the science in at you with especially with the key scene that we'll also talk about here in a little bit. Sabotage scene with the music. I enjoyed it. I mean, it was fun. It's a fun Star Trek movie. It's Star Trek, but it's Star Trek on speed. As far as the next one being even faster, I don't think it can get any faster. I think they've hit warp.
I don't know. Have you seen the Fast and Furious movies?
I don't know. Justin Lin does keep adding.
He does, pacing. Man.
I don't know.
He is fast paced.
I just don't know if you can make a Star Trek movie any quicker. This thing was on warp 10.
They have many different warp speeds, man. But the other thing I also liked about this film that I don't know if any of you got was they talked about the insignias. Their badges.
The emblems, yes. Yeah.
And each of them means a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a captain's badge. There, you know, Scotty's is engineering.
Right.
And then there's, you know, medical. And I don't know if any of you caught that.
No, I didn't, actually.
But in Star Trek, each badge means something.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, like, different, like, the emblems.
I thought it was really cool that they brought that out, too.
The emblems had, like, different markings on them. So, like, Kirk's the captain, and then you got the engineer.
Right.
Wow. Yeah, I want to watch it again just for that now.
Yeah, that's one detail I didn't quite pick up on either. All right, so let's move on. Let's talk about Yorktown Starbase. This was my moment of wow in this movie.
Do you mean Elysium on crack?
Yes, oh exactly. God. It was Elysium on crack. I was highly...
It looked better than Elysium.
It did look better, yeah.
I was highly impressed with this, because I was not expecting this any way, shape, or form, especially from Star Trek. I mean, we've seen the star bases before where the ship
Deep
goes
Space inside, Nine?
Yeah, Deep Space Nine.
You know what?
I guess they go inside a hangar. Nothing
this
like a livable environment.
Oh my God. You know what? Okay. I love science fiction set design of movies, like the original Star Wars, Blade Runner, Fifth Element. The Fifth Element was like the last good science fiction set design I've seen in a movie. I really hope at the end of the year the Oscars remembers this movie for production design, because Yorktown was fucking beautiful.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Buildings upside down.
Oh my God, like different rings. There's like intersections of like different points. Like Steph said, it's underwater.
Like the one part where the four towers all hit the same spot.
Oh God, it was like It was like Inception meets Elysium.
Yeah, and you can watch the air go through.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
It was badass. It had the little gravity channels.
Uh-huh.
The planet itself, I mean, the other planet that they end up on, Yorktown and that, this was one of the most beautifully designed science fiction films I have seen in decades.
I thought it was fantastic. It just took me completely out. I was like, this is Star Trek? I was like, wow, this is great. This is awesome. And any joke you want to make about it, Bones made right at the beginning. Looks like a snow globe going to crack.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, other than that, it was
fantastic. And then they just relished in the beauty of it, too.
I was just blown away by it. I mean, it completely blew my mind, special effect-wise.
Your daughter's like doing like gymnastics upstairs. We're hearing like bumps probably, in the
ceiling.
I think
she dropped her iPad.
I've never seen anything like it. It was so not Star Trek, but at the same time, it was Star Trek. I mean, obviously, because you see the ship go in underneath the water,
right,
we said.
Yeah.
It was just something I was like, oh my God, it talk about expanding the Star Trek universe for the first time.
First I thought it was going through kind of a hangar tunnel and stuff, and then I realized, hey, no, that's going underneath water.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, very cool. Some super cool stuff as Brian breaks his phone
and opens my Xbox.
I did not. It's closed.
All right.
Now.
So let's get to the tearjerker that Stephanie mentioned earlier. They included Leonard Nimoy's death in the story. What'd you guys think about this one, Aaron? What'd you think?
I thought it was actually really tastefully done. Like, it's kind of a nice little tribute to his role in the series. It included well, and it, even towards the end, it kind of wraps up with that. And I thought it was done very well.
I thought so too. Brian.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was good that they played on it. It was interesting that they made it as big of a deal as they did.
Yeah.
Like, I thought they were going to, you know.
Nimoy didn't die that long ago.
Yeah, so. I could see him mentioning it maybe, but it actually played a significant role in what Spock's decisions in the movie were going to be and stuff. And it's like,
I just wonder if they were going to write him out anyway.
Well, you know, what's funny is that they did talk about having to do a rewrite, and I wonder if that was the rewrite they put in there.
That probably was. I mean, yeah, that actually, you're right. That affected his entire motivation. Like, Spock's character, literally from that moment, like, he says that he wants to basically make, like, little Spocks. He's got to, like, find other female Vulcans. And, you know, because this is a timeline in which the planet Vulcan doesn't exist anymore, that, you know, he's feeling his own mortality. Kirk's feeling his own mortality. I mean, they tied it in so beautifully.
Vulcan does exist, doesn't it?
I thought
New Vulcan.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I meant. But I was like, wait, I thought he said he found a planet. Hold on.
Well, it's like New Namek in Dragon Ball Z.
Right,
they basically have the refugees, you know?
Yeah, building a colony.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because we now establish that Spock and Uhura are an item in this series, and now, like, the first time we see those two together, she's walking away from him and
trying to get back a necklace.
Right, trying to get back the necklace, and then Spock, who you can tell does still love her, you know, but wants to preserve his species. I mean, it was just, you're right. The death of Nimoy really, the writers knew what to do.
And a lot of depth. And I like the idea that this timeline Spock got his personal effects in a box. And then you got to see the picture of the original crew, cast and crew and whatnot, which was a really cool little
like, this is my timeline, and here's
something that happened.
Go your own route.
Make
your own journey.
But this is what you're going to miss out on, potentially.
Right.
You know, this is, look at what we built. We were, you know, blah, blah, blah.
He didn't look at that picture until the end.
Right, exactly. So. But because he got Spock's special personal effects.
Yeah.
Right.
Ambassador Spock. The original Spock.
Yeah, no, ID. Yeah. Him in another universe.
Right. So it was only fitting that he got
His stuff.
His stuff.
Right.
So he got his stuff.
He did.
It was probably the best. It's probably the best homage.
It was cool to hear the original, you said earlier, original Star Trek.
Well, and especially knowing that, I mean, because the death of Anton Yelchin was, like, so recent. I mean, you know, that since that was more recent, like, that was the one that we felt the most going in, that, you know, when they reminded us of Spock's death, like, oh yeah, Leonard Nimoy too, shit, that happened in between these two movies.
There you go. All right, so let's talk about a little controversy. And even, I'm not, the only reason I'm even bringing this up is because George Takei actually brought it up.
outside.
Ooh, controversy.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Sulu's supposed domestic partner.
Well, I don't know if it's supposed. Like, you do see it in a family context.
You see it in the family context.
And they did cut the kiss scene out, they said.
Right. But apparently, the only reason I'm bringing this up is because in George, Takei basically made the point is he didn't think that character
Takei
was
felt
gay.
It was a little demeaning to him as well, I think.
Correct.
Right.
And I'm in agreement with that. Like, they didn't need to be in there.
They just threw it in for brownie points.
Yes, they threw it in there because they wanted to pull a group in and mm-hmm. say, oh, look, here's the gay couple. That's
they're
hey,
the
LBGT.
Yeah, exactly.
We have something for you also.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay, but here's the thing. And, yes, I do, in some respects, like, when Takei said that, I was like, you know what? Yeah, because when he said he only came out to like a few people, and George Roddenberry or Gene Roddenberry was one of the few, and he said, please keep this private. But that was when that Star Trek existed, and since then we've come to know George Takei as being an LGBT crusader. He's the one person that I'm pretty sure that, I mean, even if you are kind of anti-gay in some way, that's the one person you're like, hey, he's awesome.
Well, but I think from Decay's standpoint, to make his character the gay character is kind of demeaning from him as an actor standpoint.
I get that, yeah.
Because he played a straight guy very well.
Like,
because we didn't find out until after the series was over that he was gay.
That he was even gay in the first place.
Like, don't get me wrong. Yeah. Like, actually, I think how they did it in the film was actually well done. If you look later on in the film, it actually does play to the fact that Sulu is concerned because his family is in Yorktown. Mm-hmm. It does actually provide incentive for that character. Yeah. That being said, I actually do think that you probably could have easily done with one of the other characters and changed it over and not had some of the same controversy.
And I think it doesn't mean that we're talking about this that makes us anti-gay necessarily. I think it just means if you're going to have a gay character, make it worth something. Make it worth it.
Couldn't have had a character that's introduced or had a character that might have been a little easier.
Like what Takei said, make a new character.
Yeah,
that's what I thought they would do. Something that could carry on throughout the next Star Wars.
Either that or have a character where it might have been easier to transition to.
Precisely.
Because, I mean, I haven't really watched the old series too much, but I don't think they ever presented Sulu in a way where that was something considered.
Even in Generations, they said Sulu had
they
a daughter.
Had him kissing women.
The funny thing,
whoever
Kirk has in the old scene, like you have like Kirk screwing like random green aliens. Like if you're going to have a character that's a bit more open sexually, wouldn't it be Kirk?
I don't know.
No? Okay.
If anything,
so what you're saying is that Kirk might have an experimental phase in this timeline.
I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying it seems like it'd be an easier transition.
The Vulcans have to mate every 7 years.
And it's a whole other can.
They did go camping.
Yeah.
The Vulcans have to mate every 7 years in order to live, and that's been getting close, Kirk, and you're starting to look pretty good.
We've heard that
story. Year three, baby.
Unfortunately, we've heard that storyline in
Living Color.
No. Whatchamacallit at Leonard, not the Leonard Nimoy, but Shatner roast.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not going to say
I've never actually seen any of the.
It wasn't bad. It was pretty good. You had Uhura and Takei roasting him. And for the last time, Shatner, it's Takei, not Takei.
Well, what I'm referencing is the Andy.
Andy Dick.
Andy Dick character that he created, which is a love child between Kirk and Spock.
The only memorable thing that Andy Dick's known for, other than being a complete tool.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Anyway, all right. So let's move on.
Steph would like to weigh in on this.
All right. I'm sorry. I thought you were good.
As far as Sulu's character goes, they didn't really portray him as gay. You're reading. Let me talk. You're reading into it because that could have been like a brother taking care of his daughter or something like that. They only showed you a picture of his daughter sitting on the console.
I understand what you're saying, but to Brian's point, they took out
the kiss scene. And when they were walking away, he was walking with the hand on the small of his back of his brother, as holding his girl as they walk away.
Yeah.
That is not something a brother would do.
What?
I'm just saying.
Simon Pegg and Simon Pegg.
That is not something we do.
Simon Pegg did come out and say that the character is gay.
Brian,
and they did take
but
the kissing out
I mean,
and stuff.
Yeah, and I'm glad they took the kissing out because it didn't need to be there.
No, it did not.
It you know, it didn't need to be there. Yeah. They didn't need to out him because they said, you know, they were looking for a group of people or whatever. And if you're a Star Trek fan, you're a Star Trek fan, whether you're gay, straight, yellow, black,
precisely,
white, whatever, you like the show.
Black on the left side with white on the right side, or white on the left side.
Shut
and black
up. I remember the original series. Anyway.
It's a good point. I don't know.
But, no, I mean, they only showed you a picture of his daughter, so if you... And I know what you're saying, that they came out and said, he's gay. Well, going into the film, if you didn't read anything about it, you wouldn't have known that.
Right, but when they docked, when they first got to Yorktown... Mm-hmm. That's when you got to see the whole scene with
the family.
The family, like it would have been different. Like if it had just been like the his daughter running up to him and then them walking off. You're right. I never would have known that they were gay. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they walked off, like they
see,
were kind of holding each other, like it was like.
And
well, there's only so much you can do.
And I kind of wish that, and I kind of wish they had done that because that would have been like, oh, okay.
Really, no. I thought how they actually did it. Like, don't get me wrong, I think you can make an argument that Sulu may not have been the character you want to do, but it wasn't particularly outrageous or.
No,
well,
it,
I mean,
it
was
really,
pretty subtle.
It really wasn't, yeah. But I think personally, I know he's gay, but I that didn't.
You know who's
to
gay
in the film?
Sulu
or Takei?
Takei.
Well, I mean, to be fair,
Takei's
I mean,
gay. We know that.
I think,
but Sulu's not.
You know, I think the fact that. You know, because what Steph's...
Apparently his now.
I mean, his now, right.
Well, what Steph's saying is, like, it's what we both read one day when I was reading the article, that they said they showed a screening to George Takei.
I didn't read that.
Well, I was read it to, but anyway. They showed the screening to Takei, and he had his objections. But like you said, they cut the scenes, so that shows that there was something that they were trying to do to still kind of pay homage to him. But the problem is, you know, you're on set, you block it out, you have only so much that you cover... I mean, yeah, his hand's still at the small of his back. That was what the blocking was. They took out the kiss, but again, there's only so much you can cut out in the editing.
Right, and I wonder if it was when they showed it to him and he said, no, I don't want that in there, and this doesn't need to be in there. I wonder if it's Peg and Lynn were doing it as a homage to
K. They probably were.
And they found out he was insulted. Here, what do you think about this? And he's like,
No,
I don't like this at all. They're like, well, crap.
Shit.
So
there is some respect that they're still trying to
like,
right.
There actually was an article or a letter Peg actually wrote to Takei afterwards after he voiced his complaints about it. More or less to that effect, I'm honest.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's get to my one sticking point in the movie.
Ew. You say sticky or sticking?
So
sticking,
after coming off of that,
sticky.
You're saying sticky. Huh?
I'm not using...
I thought I saw
your hand on the small of Aaron's back.
Did I use the word moist? Did I use the word sticky? No, I said sticking.
Are you coming to your point?
Oh, sticking. Sticky
point. His point is coming. Steph, his point is...
Oh, it's coming.
It's coming. Wait for it.
Wait for it. And that is... Okay, so the one problem...
Oh, okay.
Jesus.
Sounds like a problem.
He's like, the one problem I had. Everyone gets it.
That is a problem. I've been meaning to bring something up to you about that.
Oh, boy. All right. We're talk about
the
darkness. All right. so once again, we have once again, they destroy the Enterprise.
Yes.
Is that an issue?
Would you want to... I had a guy at work come up and actually make the joke and say... Would you really want to go on a Star trip with this guy? How many ships has he destroyed? How many times have they destroyed the Enterprise now? And it's a good point. They did it in Generations.
They did it in part three, but they keep rebuilding it better.
That's why they keep rebuilding it. Getting Osmar.
Like a Jimmy Fallon, bigger, faster, stronger.
As my friend Brad.
Isn't that a Daft Punk song?
Yes. But Jimmy Fallon does it all the time on the show.
Oh, okay.
So Daft Punk did it, but it's Jimmy Fallon's now.
It's Jimmy Fallon's now because he does it on the show.
Well, anyway, I've got a friend who enjoys doing model building and. Yeah, he's told me before, there are multiple versions of the Enterprise. Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, Kirk is responsible for maybe, well, now two destructions of the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
However, Commander Riker, whenever he gets the captain's chair, he's responsible for more destructions of the Enterprise than Kirk is. So The Enterprise has been destroyed before and rebuilt, so...
Well, sure, but I'm just saying, it just seems like...
Generation.
Is it becoming... it's overdone. I don't know. It's been... How many times can you destroy
Well, at least
ship?
It doesn't happen to every movie, though.
It doesn't, but it's like... Oh, God, again?
Well, I mean, if you look at the number of car crashes that happen every year, people still drive cars.
Yes, I know.
People still drive Saturns.
But you know what?
Those things fall apart all the time. Just there.
Those little transition cars.
Just that's Birchie.
And there's the Birchie reference.
No, that's just before Doctor No, just sound on the road dead.
No, my... I got hit for doing a Birchie impression.
Yep, rightfully so. All right.
Nah. But no, Brian. To your point, I don't think it's done overdone.
You don't think so?
No, because the way they're it'd be different. It'd be one thing if it just was getting blown up for no reason and they just got another ship. But they're actually using it to move the story along or as a major piece. Mm-hmm. So
it's not like it crashes like five times in
but
movie.
At least,
right.
At least in Generations, they got a whole new different kind of ship. This time, just like in the original Star Trek, it's the same fucking ship.
True. I would like to have seen a different
slightly
class.
It's not necessarily the same ship. It's just the same model ship.
It's got an A on the end of it, just like they did in the original series. At the end of Star Trek V, you got these.
Are we up to Z now or something? Is that
what I'm trying to say is do something with it. It's a new kind of ship they're building a new ship that's better.
It's like, well, they got to get the Generations. Same. I like their starship better. Anyway.
But yeah.
The way that they destroyed this ship was. So
I'll agree.
Freaking amazing.
They did, badass.
Yeah,
they've never done before.
I mean, this enemy that they had in this film, they called it in the film, it's like a bee formation. It's a swarm.
It's a hive.
And
reminded me of piranhas just swimming
through.
Yeah!
And dolphins or fish or anything like that. Yeah.
Those therapists.
Dolphins.
I'm gonna punch
Dolphins are fish, are butterflies, are unicorns.
Rapists.
Anyway, I thought the way that the Enterprise was destroyed, and don't get me wrong, I'm sad that it happened, but it has to happen because they have to get a new ship like every film, like you said.
Every other
film. But this was amazing. I mean, you had like billions
of bubblies.
They did it so methodically. They started with the engines and went
CG.
Down like...
Granted, it was CG. Are you going to fall asleep, Bobby?
No, I'm going to sneeze, but go ahead. I'm sorry. Now I don't have to.
It was really bless cool. You. And it basically tore the ship apart, and then it opened up like the freaking, what?
The hull. You know, not just the hull, but like
no,
a different
no.
the bridge.
I'm talking about like, it was like, well, it slammed in, and then doors opened up and these
oh yeah
the
it's like they would puncture the needle through the hole and then they would open up inside the ship and like let the warriors
and,
or whatever
and
like
each,
the two
each
pilots
plane was a two person
it was a two man ship yeah I mean they were so small then yeah like you said there's like a piranhas or a, like bees or a swarm flying
leeches.
Through and
leeches
you know,
yeah
that's a good point. But what was neat was like it wasn't just like in the trailer you see this thing go through and just destroy the ship. You're like, oh, man, that quick. But, like, no, they did it methodically. Like, they did it, like, there went the engines. No warp drive. There went the bridge.
Yeah,
none
they
of
took
this.
It down
like,
piece by piece.
Piece by piece.
Yeah,
those
are, like,
so amazing.
Cut off its head.
Right.
Yeah.
And the thing is you didn't know why it was attacking all these separate pieces by itself until you got to the end of the film and you're like, oh
and he's the one controlling them on one frequency.
Yeah, yeah. And not only that too, but like we're so used to the shields up, to you know, go to the photon torpedoes and you know, they had
shields went up and then they
shields
came
went up and they
really
still went through. I mean
no, and then they came crashing down.
Yeah, exactly. I mean it was they knew what they were doing and that's what made this threat so
To the point, I did like how they used it. They used all the ship. I mean, even after the saucer section landed, they kept using the ship.
Let's not forget,
until the end.
That slide scene in the end, like or towards the middle, like sliding down the hull of the Enterprise, that was sweet.
Yeah.
That was a sweet action scene.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. They did do it well. I'll give them that. I was just like, again?
But no, I really wish they would have got a different ship, like a different class.
Yeah, I would have liked to have
like,
seen the B.
Here's your new Enterprise that's...
Well, we could have the Voyager looking ship, which looks like
no, that
you know,
was
in James Spade.
No, not Voyager.
Not Voyager. I really like Star Trek Next Generation. I really like their Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like their ship.
I would have liked to have seen the B class, which was Excelsior class. Anyway, I'm getting real nerdy. Speaking of nerdy,
we're talking about Star Trek. I don't think there's any way you can't be nerdy.
So
about
let's
do it.
Let's get into nerdy. They actually use an NX class starship, which, if you ever watched the Enterprise TV series, is actually the predecessor to the ship that they used on the Enterprise TV series. So, which
the
was kind of
TV series or the Scott Bakula?
No, the Scott Bakula.
The
last. The last
yes, that one.
Star Trek series
kill
on
the
TV.
Franchise.
The one that nobody watched.
Actually, I did.
Besides
my dad.
Yeah.
I watched it. It was good. I watched it on Netflix after the fact, but it was actually really
It gave
really
me
good.
Actually one of my favorite George Takei lines from Futurama, where he's like, you know, Takei's head's ramming Bakula's head against the wall going, "Way to kill the franchise, Bakula."
But it is actually, I would recommend, if you haven't watched the series, get on Netflix and watch the whole all 70, or not 70, but whatever it is. It's only
17.
Like 17.
No, there was like one or two seasons.
There's two seasons.
Anyway. This review of this series on Netflix was brought to you by Willowbrink.
It's worth it. It's good. It's a good series. And it was nice. I liked how they threw...
There's another Netflix series I'm going to like currently obsess over right now.
It's not the time or place.
Not now.
No.
But yeah, I thought it was a nice little bone to throw to those people who actually did watch the Enterprise TV series. It was good. It was great. Okay.
But there is another Star Trek series in the works.
There is, and I don't know much about it.
Star Wars too.
Yep. Thank God.
That's another
that
one.
I love
Star
that.
Trek.
Is that ABC?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Disney company. Yes, Star Trek.
Yep, keep going.
Okay, here we go.
Thank you for bringing in the Star Wars.
No problem.
It wasn't me this time.
Yeah,
no problem, man. No problem, man.
All right, so anybody else got any other comments on the NX class Starship other than me? Because I'm apparently the only one.
Well, no. I really liked the fact that it was a show that it was an older ship. They had no idea it was still there.
Yeah.
They thought it was lost. And here, it was basically... The mountain had collapsed around it, so that everything it didn't look like.
Well, she had like
the
image.
Right? She had that around it.
Bloody's
like,
right. The mountain had grown around it.
Okay. Yeah.
So long. Yeah.
It was kind of cool. I mean, I thought it was badass, and
it was
like,
pretty cool, yeah.
But I have a question. Have we talked about the bad guy yet?
Not yet.
No.
Okay. It was his ship, correct?
Yes, there was a captain's.
Then how does he not realize that that's still there?
Because of bad memory.
Just, I was going to say, because of how many years it had been?
Yeah, it's been like hundreds of years.
It doesn't even work anymore. She's the one that brought it back to life.
Oh, right. No. Yeah. Yeah, I'm aware.
You're breaking my
heart! It looked bad when you first see it in the movie. Before the movie, looked like shit.
Yeah. So. All right. So let's talk about one of my favorite parts of this movie. The return of Bones and Spock, the back and forth.
Oh.
Back and forth. Talk about it being Star Trek. I don't think it gets any better than this. If you ever watched the original series, you ever watched the back and forth between Nimoy and
green-blooded Hobgoblin.
Yeah, there it is. Back. They put them together. They're in a hopeless situation together. Back and forth. I loved every second of it. What did you guys think?
I was disappointed that they put the one part into the trailer.
Like, the one where he's like, it's just you and me. And
yeah, at least
like,
I'm not going to die alone. Yeah, and then he leaves and he's like, oh, great. I really wish they wouldn't have put that in there. Like you said, I really enjoyed all of it, but I wish that part wouldn't have been in the trailer.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the funnier parts.
Because, yeah, I mean, they actually, as we were talking about, as the Enterprise is being destroyed, cut off the head, and the ship crashes, all the crew is scattered. And that's what makes the script so great, is the fact that each of them are allowed to develop their own story. You have Kirk and Chekhov. Yeah, Kirk and Chekhov on their side. You have Spock and Bones on their side. You have Uhura.
Scotty by itself.
Scotty, yeah, Scotty by himself, discovering the new alert. Jaylen or...
Jayla.
In my head, it's just
but,
a space
but,
elf.
It's space but, elf. But it's played by the girl from Kingsman with no legs.
Yeah, it is, actually.
Oh,
I looked at
it. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
That was actually really cool.
And again, another award that I hope it's remembered for, the makeup in this movie, because the makeup was amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, each of them had their own story to develop. And yeah, like, when you have Bones and Spock...
It doesn't
get
any more Star Trek on that.
It doesn't get any more, no. And the funny thing is...
Only if you add Kirk to that mix, yeah.
And I'm glad they threw that in. And I think one of the things they talked about and was the fact that for a while... Like, this just came out. Carl Urban almost was not going to come back for this movie.
That would have been horrible.
Well, because he said after Into Darkness, he felt marginalized. Like, his character was almost cut completely out. Because if you think about it, the only people in Into Darkness that you remember, really, are Spock and Kirk. That was it.
Like, and Khan.
And Khan, that's it. Yeah. You don't remember because the rest of them were all about the other movies are all about the whole crew. And then that's what this movie allowed it to do. And then when you have the Bones and
back and
Spock
forth.
Back and forth. Yeah, like, Justin Lin actually sat Carl Urban down and said, hey, I mean, because he was about ready to take another role. He was going to say, all right, well, I can't do this movie because I'm doing another film. Yeah, Justin Lin sat him down and said, hey, just to let you know, I'm a huge fan of the entire franchise. And he said, this is what I'm going to do with Bones. And the second Carl Urban heard that, he went, okay, I'm on board.
Yeah. What do you think, Aaron? I mean, I know you don't know much about
Yeah, I can't really compare it to the older series, but no, it is amusing dialogue. They do seem to have a good back and forth. I mean, the scene where you more or less have Bone just kind of, you know, sealing up the wound for Spock was actually pretty humorous.
Yeah, did you enjoy it? Because not knowing any background, but obviously.
Yeah, it's even without the background, it's still an enjoyable back and forth and dialogue.
Okay, Brian.
I already talked about
it. Stephanie.
As far as Bones and Spock goes, yes, you needed that. It was missing. It's been missing for the last two other movies. And I'm glad they finally said, hey, we're going to do this. But you also got the Bones and Kirk connection, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to be there also, because the three of them have, they're like the closest three on the ship.
Oh yeah, they're the big three in the series. So
yeah, they are the big three. Mm-hmm. Then there's Scotty and Sulu and Chekhov and Uhura. Mm-hmm. In that order probably. But you had to have the Kirk Bones moment where they were talking about Kirk's birthday and Bones stole Chekhov's, you know.
His
vodka, but it wasn't vodka.
It was whiskey or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought he was a vodka man.
Yeah, I thought it was scotch, because later on in the movie, he's joking about how scotch was made by an old Russian woman.
Yeah.
He's like
trying to justify it.
But it was really you needed that you know, Kirk Bones moment also, because that's part of Star Trek. You needed that Spock Bones moment, and oh my God, what a moment! That was fantastic.
Oh, the whole thing was great.
I mean, Bones basically rips Spock a new one for even thinking about leaving.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, have you even told Jim? No.
Oh yeah, that was another big plot point.
It didn't come up yet, but in the other flip side is you find out Jim's wanting to leave also because he's thinking about his own mortality and wants to live. Because he thinks that the same thing that happened to his dad is going to happen to him.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want that. But he's
is
like,
that why?
Well, he's really he's also thinking about why is he there?
Yeah, he joined
a dare.
He joined Starfleet
on a dare. And everyone else joined it for a reason.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, a valid reason.
Kirk's trying to find his reason.
Well, I thought it was because he's heard all the stories of captains losing themselves and everything else, because that's how it played into the captain of the other one, and he's like, in the very beginning, hearing you hear that story, is like, I want to be like this captain, which turned out to be the bad guy anyway, but...
Right.
But,
you know, they said, you know, lose yourself as a captain and, you know, everything else, and he's like, you know, we've only been, you know, we only did this small one, the next one will be bigger and longer and, you know, lose yourself
uncut
in space and, you know...
Yeah. You exactly. Know,
and in what you were saying, Steph, the ending of this movie, because like you're saying, both Kirk and Spock were kind of on the same mentality of, like, Spock wants to leave because he thinks he has to, you know, continue his race. That's the whole reason he wants to leave Starfleet. He's like, I need to preserve my race. And then Kirk wants to leave for what we were talking about. And there's such a beautiful moment at the end when, you know, like you were saying, Steph, like, Bones is telling him, you know, Kirk needs you. We all need you. And it's reminding everybody how cohesive
of a group
they are.
And you need him.
Yeah.
And then both of them, when they decide to stay in Starfleet, and they're at, you know, Jim's birthday party in the end, and they both look at each other and they have that same moment. He's like, oh, that moment you wanted to talk to me about, Spock, is that what you want to talk about?
No,
and they both say the same thing.
No, because he brought up the Ambassador Spock dying. He goes, I'm really sorry.
About Ambassador Spock. He's like, is that what you wanted to talk to me about?
Yeah.
Yep.
And he goes, more or less.
More or less.
Well,
and then Kirk says the same thing. He's like, oh, how did your meeting go?
Spock
says the same thing. And he goes, more or less. And they both say the same thing without directly saying what it was about. And they both look at each other and they both know that they have the same resolution. And like you said, they have that camaraderie. It's like, you feel it out. It feels so good.
And your mother's name's Martha, too.
Why did you say that?
Best friends forever.
That's why you don't need to say it, because this moment in Star Trek worked beautifully, and Batman Superman's a punchline.
Yeah, and they were about to tell each other earlier in the movie, too, that they were going separate ways, and they just didn't get a chance.
I don't think they were able to.
Well, probably weren't ready yet either.
They weren't ready to say it to each other.
But the events...
They weren't sure.
Yeah. But events took over, too, so...
Yeah.
But as far as... Going back to as far as, like, the Bones Spock thing...
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that needed to be
done. Oh, it was so Star Trek. That's... For me, that's what made the movie Star Trek for me. Really did. I mean, that whole dynamic.
I think the unity of the crew is what made it for me.
Mm. There you go. All right. Let's talk about, real briefly, let's talk about Kirk on the motorcycle. I loved it. I love Kirk as James Dean. That's what I thought the whole time. Action James Dean, Chuck Norris, I don't know. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I like the fact that he used the other one's technology to make himself.
The hologram.
Yeah,
the hologram was the bit that actually did.
That was so cool.
Work for me.
Yeah, badass.
You know, not even so much James Dean. It's, to me, because of, like, how old-fashioned the motorcycle was. It reminded me of, like, Steve McQueen in The Great Escape.
Yeah,
with that motorcycle would be another driving good around. Yeah,
very much so.
I mean, he rode a motorcycle on the first one too.
Yeah, that's
a great nod right back to him.
Yeah,
that was bad.
And I did like. I also like the flashback scene of him in the convertible, and he flips the top, and the top flies
up. The very first one. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
And well, because it was the right. Was that in this one?
That's no, not the first
I watched them all the same day.
That's the first one.
I watched them all blended together.
It was all blended together for me.
That was like the flip top.
Yeah,
that was like the very first one.
Yeah, well, that's what I watched them all on the same day because Caitlin hadn't seen them yet.
Okay,
so that's why I was like, and the sabotage thing from the first one. Yeah,
but speaking of sabotage, I loved how they used sabotage. I thought it could have gone terribly wrong and terribly cheesy.
I went fucking nuts because I was so happy.
But I thought that was great use. That was using science. That was the science behind it, and using sabotage, connecting to modern generation, modern time.
Let's talk about like how it built up to it too.
Yeah,
because originally, when you have the first time you hear like any kind of in this universe period music. Is when Jayla's and Scotty are fixing the ship, and they're playing Public Enemies Fight the Power. And he's like, "Is that classical music?" And she's like, "I like the shouting and I like the beat. It distracts me." And then later on, like what Steph and Aaron were saying, like you discover that these ships basically have like the hive mentality. They all communicate on the same wavelength, and any kind of sound would disrupt that. So. I mean, I was expecting to hear Fight the Power again, which I thought would have been pretty cool, but then the second she plugs in that thing and Sabotage came out, and then they even bring up the plot hole from the first part where one of them goes, "Is that classical music?" I was like, thank you! It is classical music! It's 300 years old in this universe!
It's hilarious.
But it's perfect!
It's hilarious.
Full surround sound, and then, like, the moment, like, you know, Starfleet in Yorktown picks up, it's like, oh, I'm getting the signal, hey, let's put it on our loudspeakers! And it's that moment where they're like, wow!
It's the climax of the song.
Oh my god, it was timed so perfectly. It was like a Gene Kelly musical in space blowing up.
I sat there, and they turned it on. I was like, fuck yeah!
Exactly.
Yes.
I'm like, this is beautiful.
Because I've rocked out to that song in my own car.
What's so cool about it is, they're playing Sabotage, and it looks like a damn wave coming up, and they're surfing it.
It's a wave. Yeah, it's a wave of explosions as they're breaking all the ships, disrupting it. Yeah. And it's said, you know, even though it's a bit of a plot hole in the original reboot, knowing that, you know, Kirk's playing Sabotage, it's still a cool moment.
It
brings that awesome moment back again and is his own awesome moment.
I think it's a perfect piece. It's a perfect connection to the modern generation, to my generation anyway. I mean, Brian, I'm sure you jammed out to the song.
Oh, yeah.
We did.
Yeah.
You know.
Every time it comes on, I keep wanting to, like, I wish I had a red convertible on the cliff at the time.
Okay.
Aaron, what do you think of it? You're younger, you're a little younger than the rest of
us. No, well, I mean, I still heard the song growing up. I enjoy it. Don't get me wrong, I do find the actual... It funny that that's the song they use to sabotage the ships is actually Sabotage.
Sabotage, yeah.
So there is something kind of humorous about that. But yeah, it was a cool scene. And yeah, it's definitely a fast-paced song. It's easy to get into.
Speaking
nice choice.
And I just got to bring this up real quick. How lucky is that bastard from Heroes that gets to be in fucking Star Wars?
I actually thought the same thing. It's like,
I mean, it's Simon Pegg is too.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing
but
is,
you don't see Simon Pegg in both. You see him.
Yeah, the joke is, isn't it like he's a friend of J.J. Abrams?
Yes,
and that's how he actually got into Abrams' thing.
Best friend growing up.
And didn't like J.J. Abrams like actually help him like write a comic book or some shit?
I think so. Either
was
way.
Is that what it was?
Lucky
bastard. He's talking about riding coattails.
I know, right? I was like, he's
don't get me wrong. I actually liked him in Heroes, but it's still funny. They're actually, I mean, both the guy that plays Spock also was in Heroes as well.
Yes,
yeah,
he was.
That's right. I was going to say
Zachary Quinto.
Yeah.
That was the connection they had for when he got his part.
But still, I was like, you lucky bastard. It's Star Wars and Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And he gets to play a cool role in both. I'm like, you motherfucker.
Well, an okay role in both.
Well, okay. Still, he gets to fly an X-Wing.
It's the fact that he's in both. I mean,
yeah, and he's the commander of the new cool star base.
Yeah.
Of the air ventilation system.
Yeah.
he's the, you know, the control room guy.
Still. I just had to bring
he's
it
the
up
control room guy and the fighter pilot.
Yeah. Asshole.
Oh, he's doing an okay job in Heroes.
Greg Grunier or whatever his last name is. This guy here in Four Midwest Guys hates you.
I hate you. I envy you.
I want your life.
Yeah. It's not that he hates you so much as he just wants to be in that position.
Exactly.
He's going to go all Siler on you and like take your power.
Motherfucker.
He'll cut off your face and wear it as his own.
He's let's not get too crazy.
Leatherface, yay!
Not so much Leatherface. I think he's going Game of Thrones over there. Anyway.
Well, in my head, it's a bit of New 52 Joker meets, like, the villain from Silence of the Lambs.
Moving on. All right.
Lame.
All right, so let's talk
about... I could
reference
Repo the Genetic Opera. Is that better?
Yes.
One more point, and I know this is one that Mr. Ankbauer would talk about. No Carol Marcus in this movie. We saw her in the end of the last one. Said she was a member of the crew. Nowhere to be found.
Yeah, and this one, who knows if she got one of those escape pods or something. They just didn't show her.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things like...
she wasn't at the party either. So.
Yeah, exactly.
This could be the next episode, just her on a planet by herself.
Like she's in her own little room. She's like, I wasn't even aware there was a party.
Kirk's Steph love is, interest. I mean,
Steph,
we both know.
Steph
that.
Is silently chiming in here.
No, she's not. Gonna... Hello, not getting where am I?
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah.
She could be on that other planet developing. Was it Genesis? Yeah, she's developing Genesis.
That
so would have
been cool. That would have been kind of a cool little notch if they had shown her like. Off on a special project or something.
Maybe she is. Maybe she's on New
Vulcan.
Again,
we're flying into a nebula, so...
Right, it would have been kind of cool.
They flew into a nebula with Khan as well.
All they could have had was like a little two-second blur between her and Kirk and her working on a secret project.
But here's the thing. Marcus also has a son with Kirk, so...
Right, they have to
that
go.
Yeah.
Who would be killed by Judge Doom?
Anyway,
yes.
Moving on.
Anyway. Actually, he gets killed by a member of Christopher Lloyd's.
That's what I meant, Judge.
Yeah.
Crossing my...
Moving on!
All right, so let's move on just real quick. I think we're all probably going to be on the same page here, but let's just talk about how did you think Mr. Lin did as a director, Aaron?
Actually, pretty well. Like, I'm not a huge Fast and Furious fan. Like, actually, I hate that franchise. But at the same time, I actually...
Oh,
I do hate the Fast and Furious. I hate Fast and Furious. I hate Transformers. I dislike them both.
I don't think you've offended her so much on the Transformers thing as you like wounded her in the core of Fast and Furious.
No, I understand people like it. It's their...
It's fine.
It's a personal opinion there. That being said, I actually thought he did very well in this film. He took a lot of the more fast-paced action from that franchise and really translated into the Star Trek universe very well.
Okay, Brian?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I really like the way he did this movie, and I hope he does another one.
Yeah. I for myself personally, I wasn't too sure because of Fast and the Furious. I was like, Fast and the Furious meets Star Trek. I wasn't sure how it was going to go, and I was pleasantly...
The Enterprise rolls up with rims.
Yeah. It's got neon on the bottom of the globe. Yeah.
All right, we see going to race you for your ship.
Yeah.
We see a close-up of the warp drive as the camera goes right through the entire engine.
It made the Kessel run. Oh, wait, that's the wrong franchise. Anyway, but yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by it, so I would love if he did another one, honestly. That's how pleasant
it is. I can't wait to see where he goes from here. I really can't.
Yeah,
anything he does, I'll probably go.
I wouldn't mind. I would actually wouldn't mind him helming maybe maybe Star Wars. A Star Wars movie, maybe a standalone. Yeah. I wouldn't mind.
We don't need to, was it Colin Trevorrow?
You actually want to see him do the Kessel Run.
I would. If he did the Kessel Run, be badass.
That's it. That's the next. We don't need the.
That's the spinoff. There's no Han Solo.
There's no Han Solo spinoff. It's Justin Lin directing the Kessel Run.
It's called the Kessel Run.
Kessel Run Fury Road.
And every Trekkie listening out there is going, fuck, it's Star. They're talking about Star Wars again. Anyway, I don't care.
Well, to be fair, I mean, this is. I mean.
There has been a melding of the pot.
Well, and also the reboots have kind of made it less metaphorical and more science fantasy than science fiction.
Sure.
But to touch on your thing about Justin Lin, I mean, I was kind of worried at first because, yeah, like you said, hybriding the Fast and Furious mentality with Star Trek. To be fair, I mean, considering every one of the Fast and Furious movies that Justin Lin has done, this is, like, very restrained for him as far as, like, action goes, but it doesn't take away from the action any less because it feels like there's room to breathe for the story, and knowing that he was a lifelong Trekkie, actually, you felt that in every frame of this movie.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. It was definitely there, absolutely.
And yeah, he should come back for a lot more of this franchise.
I agree. All right, I think we'll probably all be on the same page here as well. In fact, was it true to characters? I'm going to say absolutely dead on. I don't see how it couldn't have been. I don't know, John, any other thoughts on it?
No, maybe. I mean, like I said, I mean, now that we're in, like, the reboot new universe, mm-hmm. we've hybrided perfectly with the old characters and the new characters. I mean, like, the actors are now comfortable in their roles, but they're also very comfortable playing such iconic characters, too.
Exactly. Steph?
I think they did a great job.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because it's better. All right, Aaron? Brian, anything else to add?
No. Other than the Kai thing, no.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Sulu, but that's.
Yeah, that's true.
But all the rest of them, they hit all the.
I think it'd be neat to see Sulu cross through the wormhole that Spock did, and now old Sulu's in there going, oh, so I'm gay in this universe, huh?
Yeah. Old Sulu comes through and smacks him in the face. What the fuck?
He pulls out his fencing sword.
Yeah.
I find it offensive that because I'm of Japanese ancestry, you think I know karate.
All right. So we're an hour and 5 minutes in, guys, so these need to be quick round table questions.
Never.
Got so it. Let's go.
Good.
Number one, favorite quotes, Brian.
Go!
Hey, go!
Quotes.
I said
you're ready.
I wasn't ready for these.
Go Justin Lin pace here.
No shit. Favorite quotes?
Well, next one is favorite characters, then moments, and then least favorite moments. So be ready.
Do you remember any of the
quotes? There's our friend.
Yeah, I don't remember any of the quotes.
You don't remember any quotes?
Nope.
None at all?
Nope.
All right, John?
Nice choice.
Nice choice.
I mean, that was just that close-up of Kirk's face saying that line when Sabotage played.
Mm. Okay.
That's the one that comes to mind right now.
Steph?
My favorite quote was when the woman who you thought was good was actually bad. Mm-hmm. She goes, do you believe every side story you hear?
Oh.
And Kirk goes, no. and at that point, like, sails the ship with Chekhov, and he, you know, Chekhov shooting at her, and he gets away, so.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
That was a great moment, too.
Aaron?
Towards the end of the scene, you see that small little alien thing again, and he actually acts one of the shirts. So you have that still not wearing pants line.
It's a good one.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I
like the green bit of Hobgoblin.
The green bit of Hobgoblin. I was going to say that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any of the Spock Kirk moments quotes are definitely
the Spock bones moments.
Oh, you wanted little Vulcans, and Uhura didn't want them. I see where she's leaving you now.
You know, when they say it's not you, it's me.
It's really
in this case, it's really you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I also like the one with the necklace.
Yeah. Yes. Mike, I was gonna say, you got your girlfriend a Vulcan tracking device. No, it was a gift. You gifted your girlfriend a Vulcan tracking device. A radioactive tracking device.
Yeah. It only lets out trace amounts of radioactivity. It's not dangerous.
Yeah. Oh my god, that was
hilarious. Pretty much any given
of silence.
Yeah, any given line between Bones and Spock in this are gold.
Right. Okay.
Next.
Favorite characters, Brian.
My favorite character. Well, I like Kirk.
Kirk.
This one.
Yeah. Yes. dead. Nothing wrong with that, man.
I like the space elf. I don't remember her name.
Space Jayla. Elf. Jayla. Jayla. Yeah. Okay.
Bones.
Yeah.
Always my favorite.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. Jayla was a great new character, but Bones, dear God, he stole the show on this one.
I agree. Yeah. I'm gonna go with Bones and Spock.
Oh, we can have two.
Well, I said characters. Bones and
Jayla. Scotty.
Scotty.
Yeah. Okay. Dude.
Hell yeah.
But
way
yeah.
to go, writer. Write yourself a good role.
The Bones Spock stuff just it's great. And Scotty's good too.
Scotty.
So.
And Simon yeah. Pegg. God love yeah. you, Simon Pegg.
The whole bringing somebody in with the teleporter.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? He said, he's like, I've never used this equipment. It's so old. He goes, I might have like fused you together if I brought you at the same time. and Bones was like, oh God.
You and Spock, you and Spock stuck together.
Yeah,
can't think of a worse fate.
I would say that must be your favorite moment, which is our next question.
Yeah,
what was your favorite moment?
Oh, yeah. Mine. Oh God, that sabotage moment.
Yeah.
You know what? The sabotage moment was great, but I'm actually going to throw a nod to a really well designed action scene at the end with our villain and Kirk in that strange zero gravity scene, that little fight that kept like bouncing off
the airlock.
You want to like where he jumps into like the great. Gravity screen?
Yeah.
My favorite moment was towards the end where Spock is going through his box of items that he left himself.
Oh wow!
And yeah. he pulls out the picture of the old crew.
Yeah.
That had absolutely no words for me. It was perfect.
Teared up then.
Yeah.
Oh, did
I
she did.
I cried. I cried.
There's very few times that
you cried in an action movie. Wimp.
Yeah.
Wimp.
Eric. For me, it's probably between the opening sequence with the play on size, or when you first see kind of the ships that pierce through the Star Trek's main
yeah.
ship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah. See them going. Yeah.
Yeah. Mine was going to be the one where they were going through the gravity stuff.
Yeah,
it could still be that one.
No, it's not. Not going to be anymore.
Okay,
but I also did like the rebuild where they rebuilt the
rebuild
the whole ship. That was kind of cool.
That was
cool
pretty too. Cool. Mine's going to be a little different. I'm just going to say that Yorktown space station scene entering is just freaking badass. Not much is even said. It's just all special effects, but.
And great set design.
Yeah,
too.
Just
the set designer really.
Well, the way that they
talk about like it expanded my all of a sudden I said, oh my god, they can actually do that, and then my mind just like.
The way that
I wonder if one day they'll touch the Jedi's.
The way that they used the way the Franklin went into the tunnel or under the water and
came
used
up
itself.
It.
Oh and man!
Used itself
it's just
to
like,
block.
Yep.
The three ships.
Yep.
That was amazing.
That was badass.
I hate to say, Idris Elba, when you're saying that, I kept trying to think of his character's name in that, and the only thing I could think of is the Red Dwarf character. I want to keep calling him Queeg.
No.
All right, let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Anybody have a least favorite moment? I'm just going to throw it out there. I can't really think of one, honestly, but...
The beginning scene. Like, just the very first scene, like Steph said, it felt so awkwardly paced.
Oh, I loved it.
Killing the girl.
Oh,
she had
the thing in her
that
head.
That was hiding the thing in her head.
Yeah,
I was like
harsh, but
yeah.
Okay, it wasn't my favorite scene, so I'm allowed to have that.
She gets so again, like she starts getting so spiteful of me.
You just gotta remember, you're the asshole.
Always. I know, I'm always the asshole.
All right. I'll actually, you know, now that I think about it, that whole, and I've talked about this, I think, off show, probably because I didn't really see it right, maybe, but they had the two people hanging, and he's touching them and taking their DNA and making it his own. I just didn't get it. I was just like, it was lost on me, I guess, but I didn't really care for it.
That's how he survived.
I know, that's how he survived, but
that's
it just
how he
looked,
stayed young.
To me, it looked cheesy. I was just like...
The tubes. It was definitely the
tubes.
Maybe,
and,
or?
Yeah, it just... I don't know. It looked like something out of...
It looked 90s. It
looked like something out of a bee.
Just let me suck your essence out with a straw.
Yeah, really, yeah. Yeah, kind of. Aaron, did you have a least favorite moment?
No, there's not really anything that stands out.
Okay.
Mine was with the original scavengers that Scotty ran into.
The original... Oh, that first trio?
Yeah, like... And
then they never show up.
And they never show back up. Like, they were there, and then they're not there, but...
They're just like, I didn't want to get my ass kicked again.
Yeah, so...
I'm going to be over here.
So now they're on the island, they're on that planet with the technology that caused the bad guy to begin with.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, what she said was, like, multiple ships have come in, and they've kept, like, taking all of them. So there's, like, many different crews that have been on that planet.
Right, but we didn't run into them at all again? And they couldn't have gone that far. They're walking.
Yeah, they're just hiding out. They were moping.
Unless you use the amber on them later on, and then they're stuck in there.
Well, they're probably just living with the fact that all three of them got beat up by a girl.
Yeah, it was just kind of one of those things. Like, I mean, I like
they had their 90s.
I like the scene because that was the first time we got to see her use that technology,
and which comes in play again.
Right, but I didn't like the fact that we didn't get a resolution for those three.
That's a good point. All right, let's see. Where are we at here? Oh, would you like to see the character Jayla, who was our white-faced alien woman with the black lines on her face, return in future Star Treks, John?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Just because I dig her. I think she's a great action actress. Yep. I loved her in Kingsman.
Yep.
I'd like to see her in Engineering with Scotty.
With Scotty?
Oh, yeah.
Engineer's Apprentice, maybe?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I like the character. I keep forgetting her name, but I actually... it was one of my favorite characters out of the film, so...
Okay.
What was her name again?
Jayla.
I really actually think that we're going to see her in the next one, and she's going to take Chekhov's role.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
I think she's going to take Chekhov's role because she's going to have that engineering stuff, the tinkering, and the knowing how to do things like
weapons
that.
Weapons and
and they're going to pull her into that position, and they're going to write Chekhov off the show because they said they're not going to kill him.
Yeah, well, because they also said they weren't going to recast him either.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. So they'll say he left because he went for some other reason, and they'll put her. They'll slide her into that spot.
Yeah, it makes sense because she's a warrior weapon specialist.
Yeah.
You don't think they're just going to kill Chekhov off? Or
no, they already said they wouldn't.
No, they can't do that.
Yeah, they already said they wouldn't.
Okay. Well, he could be assigned to another ship, too, so who knows. Good.
Would you like to see the inclusion of new villains or bring back old villains like Khan and the Klingons going forward? John?
Actually, no. Knowing this, the fact that we had a new villain, I think that's what made the franchise so strong, is every time we've introduced someone new, like when Khan was first brought up in Wrath of Khan, that's what made him so great, was he was such a unique villain.
But he was from the original series. Just throwing.
But still, it's the fact that if they keep doing the same stuff over and over again, or the same villains, I mean, even the original movie series, they were starting to feel a little tired doing the Vulcan stuff over and over and over again.
Mm. Okay. Steph?
Yes, I'd like to see new villains. Should they bring back old ones? I don't think that they've really brought the Klingons in yet.
They've kind of hinted at them a little bit.
They've hinted, but you've never really seen them.
Well, we briefly had them in Into Darkness, but that's how badly they wasted them.
But that's what I'm saying. They need to restructure that one and maybe redo it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'll go ahead and answer the question real quick. I think they should do both. I think you should get new villains, but I also think...
See, that's my...
Because I think they should. I would like to see Khan brought back in a better way, and I would also like to see... Because in the original, the first reboot of movie, they actually had that Romulan ship that screwed up the whole timeline actually gets captured by the Klingons and gets the Klingons' technology and... balance.
And that's what I'm saying. I think the Klingon should be, you know, part of the new villain for the next film, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've touched on it. We haven't done anything with it.
Yeah, we haven't seen Kirk versus the Klingons.
Two movies, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. Iron?
I'm fine either way.
Either way.
I'm cool.
That's cool.
I think that the inclusion of the Klingons is going to be—it's inevitable because they're part of that. They're a race inside of the Star Trek universe, so we're going to see them regardless.
Yeah.
Whether or not they use one of the same Klingon villains we've seen in the past, I don't think it needs to be the same. You could have a different one, just as long as it's a Klingon.
Right.
And I think it needs to be new villains every time.
Right.
Yes.
It needs to be completely new. I don't think you're ever going to see Khan again.
Oh man. Only that's such a shame.
Well, only because of how poorly it was received, for one. For two, you're only three. You're going to be four movies in, and you're not. Mm-hmm. Why would you have the same villain for two movies? Right? You know what I'm saying?
No, he's just such a good villain to waste, though.
But even then, you only had Khan for one of the original movies, too.
I know.
But the problem with how they use Khan, and probably because of the reason you want to see him back, they pissed it down their leg,
mm-hmm.
and they had a chance to make it amazing, and they didn't.
I know.
This is not a good use of your Cumberbatch.
Yeah,
well, precisely. I think they just used him too soon in the series, in the reboot movies.
Oh, the whole thing.
I think they used him too soon, and they tried to force it.
Yeah.
But they're like, oh, he was in a tube, and he was this, and here's honestly, the other tubes of people left from his race, and both like.
Honestly, this film that came out now should have been the second film.
Yeah, I agree.
And Into Darkness should have been the third film.
An internet written fan fiction that never got filmed.
All right. Okay, so lately they've, at least in the reboot series, we've been seeing them show Spock with more feelings. We've been seeing Spock more, they've been toying with Spock with his human side and with his emotions more than they'd ever did in the original series. Would you like to see that continue, or would you like them to maybe return Spock to more logical Spock? Or would you prefer to see him continue to struggle with his emotions? I guess is the question.
I think he is still logical, and
oh, he is,
and uses his emotions with the said logic,
mm-hmm.
and that's why he was thinking of leaving, because he's like, it's more logical for me to go make baby Vulcans and increase my race,
right?
But
as the character as a whole, it seems like to me they've been really focusing on his emotional side, which the original series touched on, but never really went there.
And I agree. But I think what they're doing with him now is good, and they need to keep doing it.
Okay. Makes sense. John?
Yeah, I like where they're taking him now, because to have a stoic character like Leonard Nimoy's portrayal back then worked perfectly, but nowadays our ensemble casts are so much more dynamic than,
You need feeling.
You need a little bit of it, and I think Zachary Quinto actually does such a good job skirting that, mm-hmm. that balance between both. He's emotional, but at the same time, he still keeps to his logical side.
Spock was laughing.
Spock laughing, scaring.
Yeah, that was scary.
Dude.
Wasn't the joke is you're delirious sort of thing? Yeah. Like he was just out of it at that point.
That was the second time I think Steph was disturbed by laughing or something.
Brian, what did you think? Do you think we need a more logical Spock, or do you like the idea of...
I like where he is right now. I think if you want to keep it true to the other one, yeah, he need to be more logical. But I think the reason why he's showing that more human side is the whole relatability to the audience.
Oh, yeah, because he's in a relationship this time.
You know what I mean? You're pulling in a whole different group of people when they can kind of relate to him when they're like, oh, yeah, he's laughing at this, or he's in a relationship, or whatever. You get the non-traditional Star Trek people. You get them starting to watch, and they're like, wow, that was a great action movie. They don't say that was a great Star Trek film, or that was a great sci-fi mm-hmm. movie, or whatever. They say... Yeah. That was a great action movie. You see the action in that movie, and it's like,
and the other reason I feel like Quinto's character in these reboots is going toward his more feeling side is because in this universe, quote unquote universe,
mm-hmm.
his mother's killed.
Yeah, and he's also in a relationship
and lost his entire planet too.
And lost his entire planet, and the only one he's left with is his father. His father, yes, is logical, because he's very Vulcan. Whereas his mother was, human, and he's lost that from her, but he's trying to keep it alive.
Although the father did say, I married her because I loved her.
I was just about to say that. It's like the father in the 2009 one actually has been more emotional than he ever has.
Ever was, yeah.
In the series.
Yeah. Unless you watched Next Generation where he literally died from his emotions. But anyway, side point. Aaron?
I actually think where they're at is actually pretty decent. It adds kind of a nice complexity to character, makes him more multidimensional, and kind of sets up like a decent, smaller sub-story arc for him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That just seems like they're really focusing on it this time around. All right.
I think we answered number 8.
Yeah, I think we already answered. Number 8 was, did you like the rebuilt Enterprise? Exactly the same.
Yeah, we did.
We also answered number 9, which was, with Anton Yelchin's real-life death, do you think they'll recast Chekhov?
Yeah, we talked about that one.
Talked about that. So let's finish out the round. Quick last question. Where would you like to see the next Star Trek movie go, Brian?
On their next mission out farther in space. Mm-hmm. Although... I don't know. I really liked that Yorktown.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool.
So I don't know if I want to see them leave Yorktown or be out on a mission, come back to Yorktown to go on another mission to watch that, you know, zigzag. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I really liked Yorktown, though.
Yeah. I'd hate to see them blow it up, though. You know what I mean?
Well, no, I don't think they're going to blow it up. I don't think they'll blow it up. But because I don't want to sit, you know, like, I don't want to go deep space.
Yeah.
But I think at some point, that was the whole Star Trek series, was that they were away from everything and couldn't get back, so they were trying to navigate back. Mm-hmm. So you got to get to that at some point. They can't just stay around Earth and these other human colonies and everything else, because that was like their whole thing. Mm. Was exploration.
That's cool. Aaron?
I think it'd be interesting to see them get warped into an alternate reality.
Ooh, we're an alternate timeline within an alternate timeline?
Yeah, I think it'd be funny.
Well, we already have Yorktown looking like Inception. Might as well go full Inception.
All of a sudden, they show Kirk in the Enterprise, and his tops keep spinning.
Warp speed, Mr. Sulu.
Kirk runs in the Shatner.
Yeah.
Shatner's some bum.
Now, that would be kind of neat to have Kirk show up on one of these.
Yeah.
I would love that. That would be great.
70?
Where would I like to see them go? Yeah, where would I like to see the next Star Trek go?
Kansas. I'd like to see them go to Kansas.
I would like to see them.
Went to Iowa.
Would like to see them boldly go where they have never gone before, and
if that's
Phoenix,
that?
Arizona, then so be it. But wherever it goes, I will be happy with it, I hope.
Phoenix, Arizona. That's a rough Star Trek movie.
Okay. One thing we haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
The holodeck.
Oh, yeah.
That's next generation.
I know it is.
They flirted with it in this
movie. It is, but that'd be pretty cool if they brought it and started bringing in the holodeck, like the different generation.
Well, they started the holograms.
Yeah, they flirted with it in this movie, so yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, the Star Trek's danger room.
John, where would you like to see him go next?
You know, for as much as they've, amped it up and made Star Trek for this generation, you know, I would actually like to see them kind of go back to the science fiction route. And actually make it metaphorical. Ooh. Or make it timely, because with Star Trek II, you know, the concept behind that was, I want to make this like naval warfare in space. With Star Trek IV, it had the deeper meaning of, you know, preserving the environment for future generations. With Star Trek VI, that whole movie was a metaphor for the Cold War, the Iron Curtain falling. Mm-hmm. And those were the ones that everyone think is the best. So, I mean, I would like to see them kind of go back to that, you know, those roots of...
So you want to see them touch on terrorism, maybe, or...
No, because we've seen that enough.
we have lived that enough.
Or maybe the rearming of the world, which is kind of going on right now.
You know, it would be kind of neat to actually have them come across a society that still has kind of a classist warfare, because as we know in Star Trek, there's no economy, there's no... political party.
And if you're a red shirt, you're fucked.
Yeah, well, there's that. That's the other thing, too, is that, you know, the Federation is the fact that all galaxies and all universes that are part of this are all working together for a common good. What if in their journey or in their next mission they come across a classist thing, and then this ideals of what's going on in our current time with everything in the class kind of is mirrored? So there's a lot that can be done, and actually go back to the very roots of Star Trek and still make it timely, still make it awesome, still make it exciting, because we've got the crew, we've got the writers, we've got the cast. We could just bring it all full circle and just make it back to science fiction instead of science fantasy.
I kind of like where you're going.
Shark Week.
Here's
Shark
Week.
Shark Trek.
Shark Trek.
Actually, Sharknado Trek.
I shit you not, one of the shows is actually called Shark Trek. What? And it talks about the sharks that are really down deep that could be, like, from other places. It's fucking hilarious. But anyway, go ahead.
That would be hilarious with George Takei. Oh, my.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the shark just, like, jumps up, like, bites something. Oh, my.
Yeah.
Real quick. What I would like to see is kind of what John was talking about, but I would like to see them maybe run into... an earlier version of
Squales?
No, not Squales. Fuck the Squales.
Squales
on Shark Trek. You have to go back to Star Wars Rebels podcast on the squale thing.
Because then it would be like, just like one of those original episodes, right, where they save the whales?
Yeah.
You're like, save the squales!
It's like a crossover.
Voyage home, save the squales!
Yes! Yes.
It is the fourth of the franchise!
See?
No.
Oh my god, I'm looking at the voice meter on our thing, it's going nuts.
No.
That would be amazing.
Oh, you totally threw me off. Anyway.
Squales!
What I'd like to see is actually see them run into a primitive version of God, he got me off the squale thing. He's got me off the
Vulcans.
No, a primitive version of the the robot people.
The Borg.
Oh, I don't want to see that. That's the only one I don't want to see. I hated the Borg.
I love the Borg.
The Borg was awful.
I would like to see it be something paradoxical where they actually create the Borg.
The Borg had nothing to do with original Star Trek.
I don't care. They're fucking awesome.
What you want to see is Star Wars reboot meets Star Trek Next Generation or...
I would like to see it be something paradoxical where the crew of the Enterprise puts events in motion to create the motherfuckers.
Okay, so the Borg becomes Ultron.
The Borg become White Walkers. The Borg are like the White Walkers of the Star Trek universe.
I really didn't like the Borg, though.
Oh, I did. I thought they were fantastic.
The Borg were great in the 90s, but the more they utilized them...
I loved them.
Here's the thing. The Borg made for probably the greatest season finale of Next Generation.
Yes,
that moment with Commander Riker taking the chair, and then was it... Picard is one of the Borg, and you leave with him. Like, is it, the whole question was, can you make the hard decisions that Picard did? And that was a great finale.
If you make it paradoxical, if you make it so that they're the reason that the motherfuckers are created in the first place, fantastic.
Would you include the Next Generation crew to be rebooted?
If you do
the Borg. Like you said, like they created it,
right?
And it's something that they hint that they did, but you don't actually see the Borg. So it's like the end of one, so like maybe a future movie down the road,
or just that they're out there.
But it's not a fucking cube with machines. That's what drove me nuts. I'm like, it's so stupid.
But
here's the thing: is like in space, the dimensions of your ship doesn't matter, so it could be a square, and it was boring, because. They're kind of boring.
All right, if you want
they were very boring.
If you want to make the Borg a little bit more cooler, fine. But either way, I like that. That's my idea.
They're space zombies.
They are the White Walkers of the Star
Trek
universe.
They're space zombies.
Space zombies.
Yeah, they are.
All right,
they really are.
Are they like machines or like androids?
It's a machine that works on a higher mentality.
They're terroroids.
So basically what they would do is they would take half of your body, half of you would be kind of like cyborg.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So why do they only take half? Like, wouldn't it be
well, no, because
they just put bionic implants
they,
in.
They, oh, okay. Bionic.
And then you become part of their hive.
Oh, okay.
So your collective knowledge builds their collective knowledge.
Oh, okay. It's literally space zombies. It's Star Trek's version.
Well, I don't know if I'd consider a hive mind the same thing as, like, a zombie.
It's as close as Star Trek's going to get to it.
Well, I mean, zombies are kind of mindless. Don't get me wrong, they do have an animal instinct, but there is...
Right, but these were the zombies that, once they plugged into the mega computer or whatever, they were all, like... If you see it, I see it.
Mm.
And so they all just kind of turn and...
Yeah. So they can actually act cooperatively.
Yes.
Yeah. So imagine if zombies were like bees.
Okay. So kind of like
with
the...
machines.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even mind them, you know, throwing in a little something with Data's origin with that, too. Just throw a bone.
Now, see, that would be kind of cool to see...
Oh my god, the death look you're getting from Stephanie.
That would be kind of neat to
awesome
see a Data origin. Or like a first version of Data.
Something, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
I'm telling you.
Anyway. Or like Next Generation, sorry.
Those are the things
I did
you can
too.
Use. Yeah. So.
I really did too.
All right. So now that my controversy is out there, let's move on to final thoughts and grades. John, final thought and grade for Star Trek Beyond.
You know, I mulled over this and I actually just posted this on a movie site today. I actually gave it an 8.5 out of 10, which
B+.
Yeah, B+, A-. This is my favorite of the reboots. This goes beyond 2009, which, and even, I have a sentimental spot for 2009 because it was the first one I actually saw on the big screen. And it was, you know, from that it kind of kicked off everything I knew from Star Trek, because that's when I not only found out how big of a Trekkie my wife was, but how big of a Trekkie my parents were when I took them. And then that just kind of kicked off, like, how much I learned about the shows and the movies. Like, Steph sat me down that year, and I watched 1 through 10 of all the movies, and I got to see them all. And I kind of got where the whole Star Trek universe came from. And, yeah, Star Trek Beyond is the one that feels the most like it belongs part of that entire movie franchise. So, it's... It's modern enough for this generation, but it still fits there. So, yeah, 8.5. Great summer film. Probably one of the most enjoyables I've seen in a while.
Look at that, Stephanie.
I give it an A.
Okay.
Just because, or an A.
Yeah.
It did a good job standing on its own. It did a very good job standing on its own. As far as a reboot goes and things like that. But to me, it didn't really feel like a reboot. To me, it felt like... It
felt like an old...
A new story.
It felt like a Star Trek episode.
It felt like a Star Trek episode. It felt like a Star Trek movie. The first one in 2009 felt like a reboot of the whole series, and it needed it because you had a whole new generation of Star Trek fans, of us... finding out, hey, our parents watched this show. Hey, we probably watched this show reruns when we were sitting at dinner with our parents, or you know, after dinner we'd sit and watch TV, it was on. You know, not you, Aaron, but yeah. But it was cool, you know, and it felt like a reboot then. Now it just feels like a good Star Trek film that finally we can say, hey, we have this. This is awesome. Go see it.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't seen it yet, get off your ass. Why are you... Don't listen to this right now. Go watch the damn film.
Yeah, it's sad to say that this is, like, performing so badly in the box office right now compared to the other two. This is the one that needs to be seen.
Yeah, the word needs to get out.
Yeah.
Aaron?
I'd probably give this film about a 7. I think it's actually a really great action film. It has a really nice touch with, you know, kind of, you know, the homage to Spock and Leonard Nimoy, and, you know, it had a very good plot, and it's, you know, introduced some new characters, expanded the universe. Once again, in terms of just, you know, architecture, the Yorktown is just beautiful. So if you enjoyed any of the previous two or any of the classic Star Treks, yeah, it's definitely a flick you might want to see.
Okay, cool. Brian?
You get about an 8.59,
yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was phenomenal, and like John said, it's probably one of the best movies I've seen definitely this year, because
mm-hmm.
it's in its own little niche.
Yeah,
you know, it's not a comic book movie,
no.
So you can't you can't put it in that. And it's not an
animated.
It's not an animated movie, but it's an action movie.
Oh yeah,
and it's not a reboot either. It's
it didn't feel like a reboot. You got the same kind of classic stuff, but you had the new villain,
right.
And that's what needed to happen. If they had tried to do another previous villain from the then all this it would have bombed, because everybody had been like, why do I want to see it again? You didn't, that's two in a row now, you didn't hit it with Khan, you're not going to hit it with this one.
Yeah.
So the fact that they did a new villain,
yeah.
Just
and
with
and,
a classic the, Star Trek twist on
and
it.
And the new villain was one of their own.
Yeah, well, the fact
granted,
that
granted not one of their own as far as the crew, but
Federation.
It was a Federation officer.
Well, that was the only part that I really didn't like, because I guessed it before it happened.
Oh yeah,
you know,
because it was that predictable for me.
Yeah, me
and
too.
And going off what you're both saying, I think the one thing that we forgot to touch on throughout this whole show, this was actually a pretty good villain too.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Idris Elba is a fantastic actor, and he brought like a really good threat.
Right, well, you got to think. He was a Starfleet captain,
yeah.
So he knew how they thought. Well, he knew their action plans.
And before that, he was, you know,
he was
before the Federation started, because he was a soldier.
Yep.
He was angry he was a captain. He didn't want to be a captain.
Right.
They threw him in that position and said, well, you're going to leave the ship.
So he had a great backstory behind him, too. Yep. So, yeah, it's...
Yeah. It, you know, I would give this... I'll go along with the 8.5, the 9, B plus, A minus, probably more A minus than B plus.
9 starships out of 10?
9 photon torpedoes to the home.
Yeah. Warp factor 9. No, it was fun. It felt like Star Trek, but it was also a fun movie. It was an action movie. Part action, part Star Trek. Just part fun. And honestly, this is exactly what this franchise needed at this time. When you have Star Wars back alive at the fever level that it is, which I'm happy that it is, don't get me wrong.
But you are?
I couldn't tell.
I never would have guessed that.
But it's
you're
nice.
A Star Wars fan?
Yeah, crazy. Huh?
I really hate it. They made Chewbacca gay.
But no.
Yeah.
Lumpy.
That's so hairy.
Lumpy. All right. But yeah, so it was in an era where Star Wars has been so dominant for at least the last 2 to 3 years, and Star Trek, after it was rebooted, it was on high, and then we hit Into Darkness, and kind of went Into Darkness, and then Star Wars came back. Back with a vengeance, and now
Star Wars.
This is exactly what this series needed. It needed this nice booster shot to keep it going, to keep the fans going, to keep people going back to it. If you haven't seen this movie, like John says, it's not doing so well at the box office, go see it. It's worth it. Even if you're not a Star Trek fan, you're gonna have fun. You're gonna enjoy it. You're gonna see those wow factors. You're gonna enjoy it. I mean, even like we were talking about the bad guy, which we didn't really even talk about. He kept giving you enough Easter eggs. You kept thinking in your head, who is this guy? How does he know this? Why does he know this? They kept that hook in your mouth.
How does he know English?
Yeah, they kept that hook in your mouth, and they kept reeling you in little by little with it. And they put a nice little Star Trek twist at the end. And it's a really good movie. If you're not a Star Trek fan, you're going to love it. If you are a Star Trek fan, you're going to love it even more. So, John, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
Stephanie, thanks for joining us.
Live long and prosper.
Yep. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Yep, no problem.
Yep. Brian?
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. And for myself, B. Willie, also saying go to Google real quick and type in 4 Midwest Guys. You find our Facebook, Twitter, all that good stuff. Reach out to us, talk back to us, and we'll talk back to you. So for next time, this is B. Willie saying beam me up, Scotty. See you next time.